Star-Crossed Part 6, The Moral High Ground. Sunday, July 29th, 2356. Blue Sun's Headquarters, Zoria, Ismar Sector. Vito Santiago was not a happy man. He rarely was, and usually then only when indulging in one of his many vices, but today he was especially not in a good mood. Not only had one of his most important facilities recently burned down for no apparent reason, but also the mission that had launched from it just before had degenerated into a complete and dismal fiasco, the second such fiasco to unfold on that godforsaken ring.
"God damn it!"
he yelled, hurling his coffee cup at the bearer of the latest bad news. Relkin ducked, as he always did when Vito threw something at him, which was fairly often. Having survived 15 years as Vito's boss, for tax purposes, and chief minion, for practical ones, the Batarian mercenary knew that at moments like this it was best just to let the man vent.
"How the sprock could this happen twice?" Vito demanded. "Can you tell me that, Relkin? Huh? How does a bunch of dirt farmers just flip off the Blue Suns twice? Where the fuck did they get something that could take out a Saladin?"
"By a strange coincidence, I got someone in Com 1 might be able to shed some light on that for you,"
Relkin replied calmly.
"Well, why the fuck didn't you say so?"
Vito demanded. He got up and stormed into the comm center, where he stood fuming while the holo array powered up. Not for the first time, he reflected that it would have been just as well if he'd provided his contact on Resource Delta with only the means for voice communication. He was getting tired of looking at the guy's shifty, sweaty face. It hadn't been decorative to begin with, and now it was downright repellent.
"Vito, I can't talk long. I think the old Solarian's getting suspicious, but I got something for you."
Vito folded his arms.
"I'm listening."
Delta looked furtively around, then said,
"I know what Chen and his buddies used to take out your tank."
"Well, don't keep me in suspense," said Vito mocked sweetly. "You're the ones in such a goddamn hurry."
Okay.
Delta raked his hands through his lank, sweaty hair, trying to get a grip on himself.
"They got two cyclones. Harris brought one with him, and Melandra had an old Bartley that didn't work. She gave it to that Quarian chick, and she fixed it up."
"You're not trying to tell me they took out a Saladin with one of those weenie rocket launchers," said Vito skeptically. "Pull the other one."
No, listen, let me finish. The Bartley. It's got the mount for one of those, but the launcher's missing. They used the hardpoint for something else. I saw it when they came back to town. It's one of those big-ass Seleucian lasers, the ones their super soldiers used in the Covenant War."
Vito gave him an incredulous look.
"A Spartan laser? Where the fuck did they get one of those?"
"Harris brought it with him. I saw the case when he and Doc Solis brought it back from the wreck of his ship." Delta shook his head.
"Didn't know what was in it, but it had to be that. They stuck it on that Bartley, and then Harris led your guys up a box canyon."
"Jesus H. fuck," said Vito disgustedly.
"If Bregic wasn't dead, I'd kill a dumb ship myself. I might have to go out and kill somebody who looks a little like him, just to calm down."
He rubbed his forehead.
"Is that all?"
"Yeah, for now.
What are you going to do now?"
"If I knew that, I wouldn't fucking tell you," Vito snarled.
"Now get off the comm, but keep this freak open. I may need you to do something for me later."
"But," Delta began, but Vito switched him off and stalked out of the holler room.
"Relkin,"
he snapped as the Batarian fell into step alongside him,
"didn't I see something about a Spartan laser on the black market a while ago?"
"Yeah, 5-6 months back. The Dragons had one in that big auction on Omega."
"Find out who bought it, and what he was flying when he left. I think we just got a line on this guy Harris that's been fucking us on Delta."
Vito gave his Batarian subordinate a dark glower.
"It's about time we did something about him."
Monday, July 30th, 2356. Goodyear. Morden Solis was not surprised to see Tali arrive alone at his clinic early in the afternoon following the big party. If anything, he was surprised that she hadn't paid this visit sooner.
"Tali Shukra," he said, nodding cordially. "Didn't get a chance to compliment you last night. Had no idea you were such an adept dancer, nor that you owned such a pretty dress."
He held up a hand. "Should point out that comments have no ulterior motive.
avoid potential misunderstanding, Solarian mating drives don't work that way, merely noting aesthetic agreeability. Satisfied that he'd cleared that up, he steepled his mechanical fingers and went on, "Now, how can I help?" Tally hesitated, still working through everything he just rattled off in that particular machine gun speech, then replied, "I'm not completely sure. I have a problem. I guess you could say it's medical, though it isn't really, but it's related, and you're the closest thing I have to a doctor, so..."
Morden smiled.
"Ah, of course."
He gestured her around the counter into the lab, and touched a couple of controls on the lab bench, raising up an audio privacy field around the consulting area.
"Suspect I know what's on your mind. Have been thinking about possible solutions for some time. Might have an answer for you."
Before she could say anything, he put up his forestalling hand again. "Be aware, though. Not many simple answers. Not in biochemistry. Need to have in-depth conversation, understand risks, consider options. Not something to rush into. Literally a life-altering decision."
"Well, let's get started then," Tally said, "because after what happened yesterday, I don't think I've got a lot of time."
Blue Sun's headquarters, Zoria. Relkin entered Vito's office with a datapad in his hand and a look of pure glee on his face.
"You're gonna love this shit," he said.
Vito gave the Batarian a puzzled look.
"That's not something I hear you say often," he said.
"I don't usually have news like this for you," Relkin replied. "I checked with our office on Omega. Tarek didn't want to share. He's pissed off about something. I don't really give a shit what. But I eventually pried it out of him who bought that Spartan laser off the Dragons in January. This is big, Vito. Bigger than we thought. Maybe even bigger than Resource Delta."
"Jesus, spit it out, Four Eyes. You can be replaced."
"Let me have my moment of drama, for fuck's sake," Relkin grumbled. "The guy that bought the laser left Omega in an Exocell Ranger, the same kind of ship Brejik's boys reported finding wrecked on Delta the day after the auction. He bought bounced by some of the local mercs on his way to the Omega debris field, and they say his ride got shot up pretty good before he bolted to hyperspace."
"And you think he got from Omega to Delta that quick?"
"They didn't get a trace on his outbound vector, but if he had motivator damage, it might not matter. Weird shit happens when you take a busted hyperdrive past the light barrier. You know that. Anyway, listen, I got more. That same guy, he bought something else at the auction, right at the end. The Dragons caught somebody snooping around in the cargo area during the show, and their boss decided it'd be cute to put her on the block last thing. A Quarian somebody. Nice little item, they tell me. You know, as far as you can tell with those people. The guy that bought the Spartan laser bought her, too."
Relkin grinned. "Outbid my cousin Crad for her. Didn't half piss him off in the process. So I gotta say, I kinda like the guy, even if he has been fucking us up on Delta for the past 3 months." Vito put his face in his hands, rubbed vigorously, and then looked through his fingers at his entirely too gleeful Batarian colleague.
"Were you gonna get around to telling me who the fuck this guy is at some point?"
"That's the easy part. He was invited to the auction, and they verified his ID when he paid."
Relkin tossed the datapad onto Vito's desk.
"The guy the yokels on Delta know is Dan Harris."
The Batarian's grin threatened to break his face clean in half.
"He's the butcher of fucking Musashi."
"What? Let me see that."
Vito picked up the datapad and thumbed through the top couple pages of information.
"You're shitting me. Why is the butcher of Musashi helping a bunch of half-wit goddamn dirt farmers piss around with us?"
Relkin shrugged.
"You're obviously confusing me with somebody who cares, Two Eyes," he replied. "His ship's junk, he's stranded there. Maybe he just figures if he doesn't pitch in, they'll kill him. There's 200-some of them. Even he can't probably take them all alone."
"Shit."
Vito shook his head and repeated it with more amazement.
"Shit. I wonder if they know who he is."
"Doubt it. They may be dumb dirt farmers, but they're solid citizen types. Not the type to hide the galaxy's most wanted criminal."
Vito snorted.
"Beautiful. So what you're telling me is I can't just send Kronfeld to glass the friggin' place and be done with it."
"Sure you can." Relkin shrugged. "As long as you don't mind throwing away 100 million credits, the gratitude of the whole corporate sector, and the best PR opportunity the Blue Suns have ever had just to get your rocks off punishing some farmers."
Vito gave Relkin a judicious look, then laughed.
You're right, he said. Why do that when I can have it all? Get me a red team, Garvex, and put Kronfeld on standby, and set up a sked for our guy on Delta.
Relkin's look of glee turned darker and meaner.
I know what you're thinking, he said in a sarcastically sing-song voice, pointing at Vito. And I like it a lot. You are a foul and despicable man-dog, Vito Santiago.
Thank you, said Vito mock cordially. Coming from you, I take that as the highest compliment. Now get your ass busy. You got your orders.
Yes, sir, Mr. Santiago, sir,
Relkin replied with a brisk salute. Then the Batarian turned and left the office, trailing behind him a series of cheerful, hooting laughs. Goodyear. The rolling door of the garage next to spare 14 ground open to let in the afternoon sunlight. Griffin switched on the overhead lamps to help it out a little, walked across the duracrete floor, and whipped the tarpaulin off the half-built space frame he and Tally had been tinkering with, off and on, since they'd salvaged the wreck of the Ranger. Grim-faced, almost scowling, he took the roll of drawings out of the half-finished cockpit and unrolled them on the workbench, weighted the corners with socket wrench sockets, and took a mechanical pencil out of his jumpsuit sleeve pocket. That's where Tally found him 2 hours later, engaged in a process she could only think of as furious revision.
What are you doing? She asked.
Getting off my ass, he replied. It's time we had some spaceflight capability. The Blue Suns want to play. Maybe it's time we put the ball in their court.
This thing is never going to be capable of combat, she pointed out.
I know, but it can get me to something that is. He turned to her, his face dark and angry. I got comfortable here. Stopped thinking like a wanted man. Or it would have occurred to me sooner. You want someone to stop chasing you, start chasing him. As far as I know, Vito Santiago is still the number one guy in the Blue Suns, whatever it says in their tax forms. We'll see how frisky he feels with a reflex missile up his ass. He smiled cruelly. Tally stepped slowly closer, reaching hesitantly but not touching him.
You're scaring me a little.
Griffin snorted. Haven't you heard? I'm the vicious and inhuman butcher of Musashi. I go where I like. I kill who I want. No one can touch me. I have no heart, no soul, and no pity for anyone. Tally seized him suddenly in a fierce embrace, holding on tight, burying her visor in his chest. Stop it, she demanded. Stop it right now. Griffin hesitated, then sighed, the anger and tension draining from his body. He put his arms around her, stroking her back gently, and said, I'm sorry, Tally. I just... Damn it, I liked it here. He managed to pack an infinity of regret into those 5 words, to encapsulate all the pain and disappointment that had ruled his life since the day in 2288 when it all suddenly stopped making sense.
It's not over yet, Tally insisted.
Backing up a little, she looked up at him and went on,
And the idea of taking the fight to the Blue Suns isn't the bad one. But don't talk like that, like you've got nothing to live for.
She hugged him again, ducking her helmet under his chin, and said into his chest,
Whatever happens, you've got me.
He smiled and rubbed her back a little longer, then stepped back, hands on her shoulders, and said, Thanks. He kissed her forehead, then made a small sound of consternation and rubbed the mark off her visor with his sleeve. Sorry. And I'm sorry I scared you. I just get a little on edge sometimes. He angled his chin toward the wreckage. What do you say? Should we buckle down and see if we can make something useful out of this stuff? Tuesday, July 31st, 2356. Omega. The Blue Suns had been established on Omega for the better part of 20 years by the last day of July, 2356. They controlled entire districts, had the lives of more than 300,000 sentients in a virtual stranglehold. No one, nothing, went anywhere in their particular districts of influence without the Suns knowing about it, signing off on it, taking their cut. They were the largest and most powerful of the many mercenary and criminal organizations on the station, large and powerful enough that their leadership had begun to entertain the notion of taking on Arya herself for ultimate control of the whole place. It took 2 hours for that entire power structure to be destroyed, and the ranks of the Blue Suns themselves all but wiped out by a lone human woman.
She started out asking questions down in the mercantile zone's bars and shops, then asked harder questions of the first people directed her to. Eventually, she pushed a little too hard, somebody pushed back, and the shooting started. To everyone's surprise, it didn't end until 2 hours later, in the inner sanctum of Tarek, the boss of all the Blue Suns on Omega, and only then when the last of Tarek's bodyguards fell. Standing in the center of the room, indifferent to the carnage all around her, a gorgeous tanned redhead in a silver foil crop top and hot pants calmly ejected the spent power packs from her twin EMAG blasters and said, "If anybody would like me to dial 911, please raise your hand." Nobody took her up on it, although a moment later one of the bodies against the far wall did slide down and fall onto his face. The redhead holstered her left EMAG, slotted a new power pack into the right one, shot that guy again, just for good measure, and then walked slowly toward Tarek. The Batarian sat behind his desk, bug-eyed with a combination of awe and terror. "So," said Kay Morgan in a bored tone of voice. She fished in one of the pouches on her belt, came up with a foil-wrapped stick of I'm Trying to Give Up Combat Stim's gum, unwrapped it, popped it into her mouth, worked it a few times, then shunted it to her cheek and went on, "I'm going to ask this one more time, and since you're the last Blue Sun left alive in this shithole, I'm hoping you'll be more cooperative than the other 1,336. She walked languidly around Tarek's desk, planted one of her booted feet in the crutch of the Batarian's pants, leaned forward so that he got the full benefit of her uniform's décolletage, rested the muzzle of her EMAG gently between his upper eyes, and asked pleasantly, "Where's Resource Delta?" 20 minutes later, having learned what she wanted to know 2 hours and a good many photons later than she'd have preferred, Kay was on her way back to the docking ring. She rounded the last corner in the corridor leading to the Lovely Angel's airlock and found her path blocked by a single figure who might have been blue but certainly wasn't a Blue Sun. "Did you have to make such a fucking mess?" asked Arya in a long-suffering sort of voice. "Bitch, bitch, bitch," Kay replied. "They were only plotting to kill you. You're welcome." "I'd have handled it," Arya said, "without nearly drowning the 7th District in blood." "Yeah, well, not like they were doing anything worthwhile with all that blood anyway. Besides, that's because you've got time to be all elegant and shit. Me? Not so much." When Arya didn't move, Kay added in a conversational voice, "That's kind of your cue to get the fuck out of my way now." Arya gave her a hard look for a moment, then sidestepped so that Kay had to brush past her to reach the airlock, which Kay had no particular problem with doing. As she did, the Asari smiled and ran a hand down Kay's arm. "I bet your DNA would randomize mine really interestingly," she said. "You ever think about crossing the Wallace line? Call me." Kay glanced at her, smirking slightly. "Sure, if you think you could keep up," she said, then keyed the airlock and went on her way. Wednesday, August 1st, 2356. Zelfina Station, deep space, driftward edge of the Terminus sector. There were 1,000 or more places like Zelfina Station in the galaxy, way stations along the major trade routes, equidistant from inhabited systems, which served the vital purpose of providing needed goods and services to space travelers on a tight budget, and did so largely by not jacking up their overhead with amenities of any kind. Ruthlessly utilitarian even by the standards of space habitats, they weren't actively grubby, they just lacked any sort of creature comfort whatsoever. Marked with giant holosigns announcing the availability of the Cosmic Trinity, fuel, food, repair services, they floated in the void in their own serene orbits around the galactic core, offering a place to dock, a steady supply of helium-3, and not much else. Zelfina was one of the fancier ones. In addition to having a fairly extensive repair shop, it sold standardized space probes, proton and photon torpedoes, even personal equipment. Being situated between the Terminus and the Outer Rim, it saw a lot of bounty hunter traffic, and those guys could almost always be counted on to pick up at least some ammo, if not be in the mood to shop for new weapons and armor. It was also different in that it actually had a couple of places where a spacer could sit down and eat, as opposed to just getting the auto-galley's protein slush replenished through an automatic pipeline. One of them, the nameless greasy spoon diner up on what was laughingly called the promenade deck, was actually one of the little-known gems of the cosmos, surprising and delighting the relatively few visitors to the station who ventured up there, with its wide array of startlingly well-modeled foodstuffs, including all the classic diner standards. Zaid Masani sat in the corner booth, reading a newspaper he'd bought from the high-speed printer by the door on his way in, as he worked his way through a big slice of strawberry rhubarb pie and a cup of coffee. He was dressed like a spacer, unobtrusive and generic, but he still stood out simply because he looked like he'd recently gone 4 or 5 rounds with a heavyweight boxer whose gloves had been on fire. Bandages and strips of sticking plaster crisscrossed his face and arms. As he read, he thumbed another capsule out of a bubble pack of Regenitrol and washed it down with a slug of coffee. Despite his injuries, a smile crept onto his face as, with his pie dealt with and half the coffee left to go, he worked his way down the front page of the Terminus Gazette. A moment later, vision appeared in his wrist comm, just in time to see him let out a short bark of laughter. "What's so funny?" she asked, puzzled. She'd never actually seen him laugh before. It was a little creepy. "Take a look at this," he said, plunking the paper down and raising his wrist so she could pick it up with the wristcom's camera. "Turns out this week wasn't a total loss after all. Somebody showed up on Omega yesterday and killed every blue sun in the place." Vision scanned the front page. Most of the article was inside the paper behind a jump, but she got the general idea from the lead and opening paragraphs. "Wow. There were a lot of blue suns on Omega. Who was it? Starfleet Marines? White Legion?" Zaid picked up his paper, fluffed it out, and took another sip of coffee. "They don't know. Says here they think it was a bounty hunter." His smile broadening a little, he went on, "Whoever it was, they made my goddamn day." "A bounty hunter?" Vision asked. "You know any bounty hunters who could take out every blue sun on Omega in one day?" "Besides me, if I put my mind to it. Maybe Jango Fett, but why would he bother? Ironheart, maybe. Nah." He shook his head. "Not her style. She's a surgeon. This thing sounds like it was a goddamn bloodbath." He put the paper down. "What have you got?"
"I just dove the Blue Sun's master computer again. They're sending another team to Scandia. Looks like commandos this time."
Zaid looked interested.
"Get any names?"
"A few. None that mean anything to me. The team lead is someone named Garvex."
Zaid whistled.
"Vito's really pissed off."
"How do you figure?"
"Garvex is a Krogan battlemaster. Always travels with a crazy Mimbari assassin named Varen. Get the joke?"
Zaid's smile was humorless this time.
"If Vito's sending those two, he's turned a corner. Now he just wants everyone dead."
"Come on, finish your coffee and let's get moving. Between that and the Omega thing, I've got a real bad feeling about this."
Zaid did finish his coffee, but when he put the mug down, he said,
"I'm not going to be much good to you with no rifle and a big goddamn hole in my armor. Gonna have to swing by Marcus's before we leave."
"What do you think I've been doing while you've been drowning your sorrows in coffee and a delicious pastry?" Vision replied. "Your new gear will be in the docking bay before you are. Let's roll." The grizzled old merc got to his feet, picked up his blister pack of regen stims, and flicked his credit chit past the card reader.
"I hope you picked me out some pretty new armor," he said sardonically.
"I think you'll like it," Vision replied. "Your eyebrows are growing back nicely," she added as he left the diner. "By the time we get there, nobody will even be able to tell that you almost blew yourself up." Thursday, August 2nd, 2356. Goodyear.
"But you still don't know who it is," said Scott Chen.
Morden shook his head. "No. Transmission's too brief. Masking protocol unexpectedly sophisticated. Between Sunday's traffic and this morning's, have narrowed it down to northeast corner of town. Radius of about 100 yards. Say 2 dozen houses."
Tally rezzed up her Omni-tool by way of illustration.
"I captured his masking protocol during the last session. By the time he transmits again, I'll have finished a predictive algorithm to counter it. He won't get away from us again."
"I still can't believe it," Chen said. "How could one of us be helping the Blue Suns? How'd they even make contact? Whoever it is can't have been undercover for the last 10 years. We didn't even know we were coming here."
Probably during initial incursions last year, Warden said, before Dan and Talishukra arrived. Still, it's hard to get my head around the idea that one of us could be helping them try to strong-arm us out. I mean, whoever it is, this is his home, too. Everybody voted to stay. Whoever it is must have changed his mind, said Tally. Anyway, I've got work to do, but my capture software is almost ready. I'll let you know when we intercept another transmission. Yes, things to do as well, said Morton, rising. Good day, Sheriff. What's the matter, Morton? Tally asked as she and the doctor crossed the square toward the clinic. You seem preoccupied. And I don't think it's just because of what we talked about the other day. Morton shook his head. No, not that. Concerned about that, but your decision, not mine. No, worried about most recent results of soil adaptation assays. He waited to elaborate on that until they were back in the clinic, away from the possibility of being overheard. Denton went on gravely. Have strong suspicion, rapidly approaching certainty, that victory over Blue Suns, even if achieved, will be meaningless. Tally tilted her head. What do you mean? Look, said Morton, handing her a datapad. I'm not the biologist, Tally said. No, but can read a graph, Morton replied, sounding dispirited. Downward curve plots soil viability for levoamino agriculture. Samples taken from randomly selected points throughout farm. Decline in viability steady across board. He shook his head. Adaptation only temporarily effective? Halo environment self-correcting? Can't tell. Doesn't matter. Losing ground, no pun intended. At current rate of decline, colony will drop below self-sufficiency threshold again in 6 months. Worse, possibility of dextroamino flora being mistakenly harvested, used to feed colonists or livestock. Disaster. He took back the datapad, looked at the graph again as if hoping it would say something else, then put the pad down on the counter and gave Tally the most defeated look she'd ever seen on him. You adapted the area once, Tally said. Can't you do it again? Could try. Probably don't have time. Took years the first time. Stockpile's insufficient. No guarantee of success. Warden sighed. No, have to face facts. Great human scientist once said, the universe is under no obligation to match up with our expectations. Data unpalatable, but cannot lie. The old Solarian poked listlessly at the datapad, scrolling through some more of the unpalatable data, then crystallized his findings into a single, heavily spoken statement. Goodyear colony doomed, regardless of Blue Suns. You're sure about this? Absolutely. Who else knows? No one. Only admitted it to myself this minute. Double-check all your findings. Make sure your samples weren't contaminated. You've had all that food you've made for me in here. I know you're not a sloppy researcher, she added quickly before he could take offense, but mistakes happen. There's no sense upsetting the others, unless you're as certain can be. Right? Morton smiled wanly. Yes, of course, quite right. Always verify findings. We'll get right on that. Doubt I'm wrong, but for once, hope so. He turned to enter his lab and set to work, then turned back. Thank you, Talishukra. He drew himself up and straightened his black-trimmed lab coat ostentatiously. If nothing else, must face defeat like scientist. He brightened slightly. Also, was so preoccupied, almost forgot. Did finish what you asked for while waiting for assays to run. He went to the safe in the corner, keyed in the combination, and extracted a shiny metallic capsule about the size of a human pinky finger, then brought it across to her. Before handing it over, he held it up between them and said, "Must caution you once more, however. Experimental both biochemically and socioethically. Side effects in both areas may be unpredictable. Possibly extreme." Then, smiling, he placed the vial gently in her open hand. But, as human cosmeticians say, it's your genome. Tally stood regarding the silver capsule in silence for a full 4 minutes, while Morton busied himself resetting the assay systems and loading the soil collectors up to be autoclaved. Then she closed her hand around it and held her fist to her chest, head bowed, for another 2. Then she turned to Morton and said, "Let's do this." She arrived at the garage next to Spare 14 10 minutes later to find Griffin welding part of the space frame for their escape ship together, pausing occasionally to refer to the big technical diagram tacked to the wall. The vehicle was really starting to take shape, in large part because he'd spent almost every waking moment, and a few of the sleeping ones, since their conversation out here on Monday working on it. Between the two of them, they'd pretty much finalized the design by Tuesday night. It was a simple craft as these things went, more reminiscent of a lifeboat than the starfighter it had once been. Essentially, it was a small reactor cannibalized from a household generator, the Ranger's number 2 fusion turbine, a couple of seats, some avionics, a base cabin life support plant, an inertial damper, and, well, not much else. It had to be this ruthlessly simple in order to keep the mass and volume down, because by the time they'd finished piecing together what was left of the hyperspace motivator, they had a drive core that could sustain useful superlight velocities within an envelope little larger than a big passenger car, and up to a mass just a bit more than 2 tons. Tally had argued against the cabin life support system, insisting that Griffin's CVR-3 and the CVR-class modifications she had made to her encounter suit so that she could use the Bartley would be sufficient as long as they had a decent gas exchange system aboard. She would have preferred to mount a deflector shield generator and maybe a couple of the Ranger's salvaged weapons. Griffin wouldn't hear of taking her into space with nothing but vacuum outside her visor, though, pointing out that, CVR mods or not, her suit was still not properly space-rated. And anyway, the point he'd finally won the argument with, shields and weapons required too much reactor capacity. They'd have had to fit the Ranger's reactor then, which would have put them way over their mass budget. They'd disagreed, though not rancorously, over what to call it as well. Tally had caught a little bit of the aggression she'd chided him for and plumped for calling it the Retaliator. He'd pointed out that they weren't mounting any weapons, which might make a name like that constitute premature jocularity, and suggested Diogenes, after the ancient Greek cynic who wandered the world looking for an honest man instead. Now he looked up from his welding, tipped his tinted mask up, and said, "Hey, how's Morden's pulse beating?"
"He's not sure," Tally replied. "He thinks you can't tell anyone about this until he's finished double-checking his findings, but he thinks Halo might be resisting the adaptations he made to get the farm working. And if that's true..."
She trailed off, but he didn't need her to draw him a diagram.
"If that's true, the colony can't stay here anyway."
Tally nodded.
"Shit."
He turned, set the welding gun down on the bench, and switched off the welder, then stood still for a few seconds, drawn into himself in thought. Then, with a second furious expletive, he kicked a piece of scrap armor, sending it clanging into the corner of the garage.
"Why does everything I touch turn to shit?" he asked rhetorically.
"This isn't your fault," Tally protested. "You didn't even know this place was here."
"No, but now that I'm here, it's all falling apart."
He sat down on the overturned bucket he used for a work seat.
"This always happens, Tally. Always. I get comfortable somewhere, I start thinking maybe I can regroup and get a handle on things and start figuring out who I am and what I have to do to fix this, and it all goes to hell. If it's not Kay tracking me down, it's bounty hunters screwing up my life, or Genom's goons, or shitbags like the Blue Suns, or..." He gestured vaguely in the direction of the farm. "Or the goddamn ground, apparently. I'm just sick of it. There's got to be some place where a man can catch his breath." He sighed. "I just wish I could find it."
Tally folded her arms and tilted her head.
"Are you done?" she asked.
He glanced up at her, then grinned and got to his feet. "Yeah, for now. Let's finish welding this and start wiring up the motivator harness." As the day's work went on, Griffin half-consciously noted that Tally seemed to be dragging a bit. By nightfall, she was visibly wilting, not at all the usual dynamic presence she was in the workshop. She'd stopped speaking except to offer the most basic acknowledgments and comments, and she didn't have her usual flair with the wrenches and torches. She still did the work and did it well, to a standard he couldn't possibly have dreamed of attaining at her age, but the spark seemed to have gone out of her.
"Are you okay?"
he asked after she dropped a tool.
"Fine," she said, but she didn't look at him. He bent down and retrieved the tool.
"Tally, seriously, are you all right? The last couple of hours it's been like watching a toy wind down."
"I said I'm fine," she snapped.
Now give me that sprocking dino spanner and let me get this done.
Griffin gazed at her for a few moments, then handed over the tool and resumed his own tasks without another word. For another 2 hours, neither spoke more than the bare minimum necessary to get the work done. It wasn't until they'd knocked off for the night and were getting ready for bed that Tally broke her silence to say,
"I'm sorry I yelled at you."
"It's okay," Griffin said.
"Are you absolutely sure you're all right?"
She revved up her Omni-tool and consulted a couple of readings.
"I'm running a moderate fever, my throat hurts, and my head is pounding."
She dismissed the tool. "It's nothing to worry about."
"Since when is a fever nothing to worry about?"
"I probably got a little sloppy changing one of the carts in my CO2 scrubber yesterday. It happens sometimes. If I was sick, I'd feel a lot worse than this." She got into bed. "I'll be fine in the morning."
"If you're not, I want you to go see Morden," Griffin said, climbing in beside her.
"I will, but I won't need to. Don't worry so much." Tally turned and nestled into her usual place at his side. "I'm not made of glass, you know."
Friday, May 4th, 2356. Blue Sun Starship Incinerator. Aquila System, Ismar Sector.
"Okay, you sure you know what to do?" Vito asked with greater patience than most of his subordinates had ever seen.
Yeah, I got it," the hologram of the Sun's agent on Delta replied.
He scraped his hands back through his hair once more, nervously, and said,
"You're sure you want me to play it like this? I mean, once I do this, we're blown."
"Once you do this, it won't matter," Vito said. "Unless you'd rather I just sent my guys in first and kept your 10%.
No, shit. If this is how you want it done, I'll do it."
Delta nodded vigorously.
"I'll get it done."
He squared himself up, raked back his hair yet again, and seemed to get a little taller.
"I'll do it right now."
Vito smiled.
"Good boy. My team's already in the system. You get the colonists out of their way and they'll move in."
"Right. Okay. Delta out."
Vito waited until the image had completely derezzed, then turned to Relkin.
"I can't believe that kid actually thinks I'm going to give him 10 mil for making my life harder."
Relkin shrugged.
"Hope springs eternal,"
he smirked.
"As does greed."
"Here's to greed,"
Vito replied, clinking his coffee mug against Relkin's can of beer. Goodyear. Tally woke in some confusion from a dream in which she walked into the main room at Charlie's in the middle of last weekend's victory party and took off her helmet. She was momentarily so disoriented she thought she might actually have done it, but a quick instinctive check confirmed that her neck seals were still engaged and her helmet right where it belonged. A moment later she realized that the headache was gone and her throat was no longer sore. And a moment after that, it dawned on her that the reason she'd awakened was because her Omni-tool was sounding an alarm.
"Huh?" said Griffin. "Your arm is ringing."
"My Omni-tool. It's..."
Tally sat upright, hurling off the covers and stabbed at the tool's virtual keys.
"It's picked up another transmission from the Blue Sun's agent, and this time it's broken his masking encryption."
She sprang out of bed, grabbing her gun from the nightstand.
"Come on!"
Griffin somehow managed to get out of bed, into jumpsuit and boots, and out the door at more or less all the same time, though for the first couple of steps up the street in her wake, he was hopping on one foot while negotiating with the other boot. They went first to the clinic, and, finding no one there, cut across to the security office.
"Scott," Tally said as they entered, "I've got him. The Blue Sun's mole is..."
She skidded to a halt, both physical and verbal, as she realized that the person she was about to name was already in the room.
Hedrick Mitchell?
She then realized that aside from the oddly triumphant Mitchell and a grim-faced Scott Chen, the room also contained Morden, three uniformed militia officers with their weapons drawn, and a perfectly furious-looking Melander Caspian, who, without any preamble or declaration at all, stepped past Tally and clobbered the completely unsuspecting Griffin in the side of the head with the butt of the very same pistol she'd once threatened the young Quarian with.
"Ow," he said from the floor. "That was ow there."
Heedless of the militia officers, Tally whipped her scattergun from her back and nearly jammed the muzzle into Melander's face.
"Drop that Kriftet gun, or you'll be chasing your head into Detention B," she snarled.
Instantly, the officers, one of whom Tally was vaguely annoyed to see was Garrett Redding, and carrying the MA-5B she'd given him, no less, raised their rifles to their shoulders and covered her.
"Hold it! Hold it!" Chen bellowed, surprising everyone. "Melandra, goddammit, this is my station! You are way out of line! Tally, put that friggin' cannon away! The rest of you stand down! We got enough problems without starting firefights amongst ourselves!"
"I'm out of line! I'm out of line!" Melandra blazed at him.
"Yes!" Chen roared. "You, Madam Mayor, are out of line! Now let's all calm down and clench our sphincters and give the man an opportunity to explain himself. Man's got a right to confront his accusers."
Melandra glared at him, then slowly opened her hand and let the pistol fall to the floor. Tally continued to hold down on her for several seconds until she'd backed away. Then she stowed the briar and helped Griffin to his feet.
"You know something," he observed as he felt at the corner of his jaw. "I could swear I've been pistol-whipped by you before."
"You bastard," Melandra replied venomously. "How long did you think you could get away with it?"
He sighed. "I get asked that a lot. The answer's always the same, as long as my luck held, which usually isn't very long." He looked at Mitchell. "Who hooked you up? Vito?"
"Ha! I hooked him up," Mitchell replied. "He had no idea you were here until I told him about your stunt with the Spartan laser."
Griffin nodded. "I figured that might cause a problem. Still, when you're up against a tank and all you've got is a couple of cyclones, your options are limited."
Chen looked confused.
"Wait a minute, wait a minute. You're acting like you already know what Herrick's accused you of."
"Sure I know," said Griffin. "You think I haven't had this day before? I've been living with this shit since before you were born. I get someplace where I think I can maybe catch my breath, I do some good, I help some people, and then some overzealous twat recognizes me and figures he'll be a hero of the galaxy." He shrugged. "It happens a lot. To be honest, I'm getting pretty sick of it. Although at least this one told a cop instead of going for the gusto himself. That never ends well for anybody."
"So you admit you're the Butcher of Musashi," said Melandra. "No. I admit that I'm Ben Hutchins, and every idiot in the cosmos seems to think I'm the Butcher of Musashi," Griffin corrected her. "But you want to know something funny? I'm not. The Butcher of Musashi, and, more to the point, his masters, are getting away with it every day, while people like you hit me in the head and call me you bastard."
The topic seemed to spark him into a bit of a fury. Turning to her, his face seeming to get red in direct proportion to how white hers was becoming, he went on,
"And where do you get off claiming the moral high ground? You're a fucking terrorist!"
At her shocked expression, he went on, "Still think everybody else was born yesterday, huh, Miranda? Yeah, I remember you. With that memory of yours, I'm surprised you didn't recognize me. I mean, I'm the one who's not even wearing a disguise. It was me and Zoner who took out the elusive man back in the day, if you'll recall." He eyed her up and down. "I have to say, apart from your memory, you've held up well. Bet you even had to bleach your hair so people would think you're old," he added with a sardonic smirk.
"Okay, I'm completely lost now," said Chen.
"Well, hell, Miranda, what do you think?" Griffin asked, "since we're putting it all on the table. Sheriff Chen, I'd like you to meet Miranda Lawson, former cell leader in the Cerberus terror organization, human supremacist, actual as opposed to accused murderer, genetically engineered superwoman." He winked at Miranda and made a clicking noise in the corner of his mouth. "Not quite perfect." Chen blinked.
"Is that true?"
Miranda sighed.
"Yes," she said. "Well, mostly. I'm not a human supremacist. And Cerberus was not a terrorist organization," she added, glaring at Griffin.
"Oh, the hell it wasn't," Griffin replied. "You assholes assassinated a Seleucian admiral, experimented on children, tried to poison a whole goddamn Turian colony. Do I need to go on?"
"I'm not going to stand here and take this from a man who slaughtered an entire first grade class," Miranda spat.
"No, you're not. Because unlike everything I just said about Cerberus, I didn't do that," Griffin shot back.
"All right," Chen barked. "Jesus Christ, you people. I had enough problems before finding out that my chief deputy is the most wanted man in the universe. Now, on top of that, I find out the mayor of my town used to be,
whatever you were?
Scott, have I ever done anything to make you believe I had anything other than this colony's best interests at heart? Even before we founded Goodyear, I was on your side, Miranda said. I really was a merchant captain. I'd left my Cerberus years far behind me, and when we crashed here, I was ready to make a go of it. I worked just as hard as anybody else to make this place what it is. Didn't I?
Yeah. Yeah, you did, Miranda. But since he got here, so has Dan. Or whoever he is. He's had plenty of chances to do us wrong, and he's done nothing but help. Shit, he and Miss Tally have saved this damn town twice, and no thanks to you.
He pushed his cap back and scratched his forehead.
Shit. You put me in a hell of a position here.
Herrick Mitchell put in. Does anyone want to hear Vito's offer? Griffin snorted. Let me guess. You turn me over to him and he leaves the colony alone.
And gives us 40% of the reward, said Herrick triumphantly.
40 million credits. Think what that could do for this town, Mayor, Lawson. You could get a hyperwave beacon, set up some trade routes, really make this place into something. Scientists all over the galaxy are going to want to come and study Halo, and we'd be in position to make it happen for them. We could be somewhere instead of pretending it's the sprocking Bronze Age.
Are you an idiot? Tally snapped. You think the Blue Suns haven't thought of that themselves? That's why they've been trying to force you all out of here this whole time, so they can have the monopoly on Halo. Shall I tell you what this veto will really do? He'll take Benjamin and sell him to Genom, keep the 100 million for himself, and glass this place and everyone in it. He gets the money, he gets Halo, with one small burnt spot. No witnesses, no loose ends. That's the kind of man you think you've made a deal with.
That's a bright kid, said a gravelly voice from the doorway. You ought to listen to her.
Everyone turned to see a man nobody recognized, middle-aged, graying, and scar-faced, holding down on the whole room with a gleaming red Hyperion Sentinel battle rifle. He wore red-trimmed body armor of silver metal and black composite, and had an air of supreme, deadly confident calm as he took complete control of the situation without firing a shot.
Who the fuck are you? Mitchell demanded.
The man regarded him coolly with the eye not looking through the Sentinel's optical sight.
Someone who's forgotten more about Vito Santiago than you'll ever know, he replied. Now shut up, the adults are talking.
He glanced at Scott.
You the law here?
Insofar as it goes, you've got me at a disadvantage, stranger. The name's Chen.
Sheriff Scott Chen.
Zaid Masani, the gunman replied. We're all in a lot of trouble on this little ring, Sheriff, and we're not going to get out of it by pointing our guns at each other instead of downrange. So what say we all calm down, put them away, and see what we can do to keep our balls out of the fire?
That's what I've been trying to make happen for the last 20 minutes, Chen replied. Guys, stand down. If this guy wanted us dead, we'd be dead by now.
Zaid smiled slightly and gave the sheriff a courteous nod as the militiamen slung their weapons. Then he stowed the sentinel on his back and said,
Nice to deal with a reasonable man. Now listen. There's a Blue Suns dropship about 10 minutes out. They're going to land right at the end of your main street this time. No screwing around. There aren't many people aboard, but the ones they brought are serious heavy hitters, and they have one goal.
He pointed at Griffin.
Him. They'll kill anyone who gets in their way. Makes no difference to them. Vito intends for you all to be dead by this time tomorrow anyway. We're all going to have to be on the same page if we want to get out of this alive.
Why should we believe you? Mitchell burst out. Vito and I have a deal.
Quicker than the eye could follow, Zaid snapped his sidearm out of its holster and fired from the hip, gunslinger style. Mitchell grabbed at his thigh and fell to the floor, so surprised he didn't even feel the pain at first.
Ah! He said. You shot me!
I told you to shut up and let the grown-ups talk, Zaid growled. I don't like to repeat myself.
He, does raise a valid point, Griffin put in. I mean, granted, Vito's a bastard, and he's planning to double-cross everybody, but what makes you our guardian angel all of a sudden?
Zaid holstered his sidearm and stepped further into the room.
I'm here, I'm armed, and I'm offering to help.
He took a small circular device from a pocket on his belt and placed it on Chen's desk.
Under the circumstances, do you really need more?
Griffin blinked as, now that Zaid wasn't in the way, he saw what was standing out in the square.
Hey, he said. That's my Valkyrie. How'd that get here?
I flew it here, Zaid said.
Why?
Because that's what I was hired to do.
Zaid switched on the device, which proved to be a miniature holojector, and a moment later a 6-inch-high image of Vision appeared.
Hey, boss, she said cheerfully. I just can't leave you alone, can I?
To be continued in Part 7, The Purest Form of Democracy.